Hi, everyone. Welcome into Maisie Days. I'm Amanda.
That's your news voice.
Well, that's who I am.
I'm Randy, in my real voice.
That's not your real voice.
That is my real voice.
No, it's not your real voice. It's this low, mumbly...
Well, I'm tired today. You want to know why I'm tired? How long have we been married? 100 years?
Oh, yes. It definitely seems like it.
How many times in those 100 years have I woken you up from a sleep?
Not very many.
And in those 100 years... You have woken me up on average 4 times a night.
Right, because you snore.
Times 100 years.
You snore.
I've been awake more than I've been asleep.
You snore.
When you say I snore, let's let the listeners hear why you wake me up at night. I go to bed first, and I usually fall asleep first. And here's why she wakes me up. Now, you got to listen real close for this, listeners. Did you hear that?
Okay, you're going to embarrass yourself because I'm going to...
Did they hear that?
I'm going to record you snoring.
When I do that, it's like, wake up, roll over, go get a drink, do something. I can't sleep, you're snoring.
Okay. You're going to be super
embarrassed. In case they didn't hear it the first time. here it is. I'm getting real close to
them. You are an asshole. Stop. Okay, you are going to be exposed next week because that is not what you sound like. It sounds like a chainsaw. And yes, when we were first married, I would kind of rub your arm like, hey, babe, can you
rub
move
my
over?
Arm?
I would just kind of like wake you up a little bit. Now I hit you and say, roll over.
So, I have no memory of you rubbing my arm.
You're asleep. You're snoring. You're like in this deep slumber. Okay, that's fine. I will record your snoring and you will be exposed and you will be embarrassed.
So that's why I'm tired today.
Yeah. Well, also because you didn't sleep on the bus on the ride back from Charleston. I thought that's where this story was going. I rode the bus with you. I decided not to drive. And there are the rumble strips. And I just had to laugh every time our driver hit one because you were starting to fall asleep. And then you sit right up. And all I could do was laugh. And we just kind of looked at each other. But it was a good trip. We beat Marshall, so worth it.
I would rather ride in the lavatory in the back of the bus than... start dozing off when they hit those. You know, I grew up calling them gurgurts.
Yeah.
Because when you go over the rumble strips, first the front tires hit them and then the back tires. So it goes gurgurt, gurgurt. So I grew up calling them gurgurts. So to all the bus drivers out there that are listening, when you're driving the Mountaineers, please don't hit the gurgurts.
I'm sure they're all listening.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
All right. We always start off talking a little baseball. BYU, Big 12 opening series. Won that series, beat Marshall Tuesday night. You have Ohio State this weekend. Things are pretty good right now for the Mountaineers.
Yeah, still got all of our best players injured, but playing pretty good. And everybody asked me, when are they coming back? When are they coming back? I don't listen to trainers and doctors for the most part. I judge how healthy they are. If they have lower body injuries, they race me in the outfield. And if I can beat them, they're not able to play. If they can beat me, then I'll get them in the lineup. So last night, Grant Hussey had a pinch hit appearance because he beat me in a race. JJ and Logan Sauve have yet to beat me in a race, so they're not available to play yet.
I get those questions too. When are they coming back? And I just say, I don't know. I will never divulge information.
How many people you think would buy a ticket to see me and JJ Weatherholt race in the outfield to see if he's able to play?
I think they'd be there more for JJ than you.
No, see?
You could probably sell a lot of tickets.
Why would you say that?
Because it's true. You did something really cool with a team Sunday night. The community really stepped up. I wanted to touch on this because you asked the community during our leadoff dinner if they would cook our players' favorite meals. And they stepped up and they did it and the guys loved it.
It wasn't just their favorite meals. It was their favorite home-cooked meal as a child that Mama used to make. Because our guys come from, I think we only have 4 guys on the team from West Virginia. And only one of those is local. Aaron Jameson comes from Morgantown. So our whole team comes from a distance to go to college. And one thing when you go off to college you miss is Mama's cooking. So in 35 years of coaching, I've always wanted to have the team have a meal where they all got to eat their favorite home-cooked meal by Mama or Grandma or Daddy or somebody from their childhood. So I asked every guy on the team this year what their favorite home-cooked meal was, and they told all 800 people at the leadoff dinner, and we asked for volunteers who were willing to cook those meals, and the community really stepped up. It was so cool. We had the party Sunday night, and the people who volunteered put a lot of effort into cooking these meals. Some of them called Mama and asked for the exact recipe, but it was, we tweeted some pictures, but I have never seen our team that happy. I know we won the Big 12, we beat Texas, we swept TCU. I've never seen them so happy as when they ate their favorite home-cooked meal. And about 10 of them come up to me afterward and said, Coach, that's the best idea you've ever had. And somebody out there, after it was all over, said, Coach, great idea. What is your favorite home-cooked meal? Maybe somebody will do it for you. I had to think about it because growing up, I ate a lot of steakums, chicken rondelles, and chicken pot pies. All store-bought, cook it for a minute and a half and eat it. But after some thought, I'm going with Mama's meatloaf. My mama made a badass meatloaf. You know, every time we go to the Cracker Barrel, if it's not breakfast, but it's always breakfast at the Cracker Barrel, but if I'm in a lunch kind of mood, I always get their meatloaf, big time meatloaf.
Some of those meals were not easy to cook either, right? Like, didn't somebody want crappy and somebody tried to go out and catch some crappy? They were unsuccessful, but this wasn't just your random maybe spaghetti and steak. Some of these were very specific.
No, it was very specific. Oh, J.J. Weatherholt, of all people, he's got a Korean dish that he likes called bulgogi with kimchi. And somebody stepped up and cooked him bulgogi steak with kimchi. And I asked him how it was, and he said it was phenomenal. And we have a Dominican player that liked mango. At first, when he said that was his favorite home-cooked meal, he said, Coach, I can't ask somebody from Morgantown to cook that. They can't even find the ingredients up here. I was like, come on. It was Armani Guzman. I said, come on, Monty. You're underestimating the power of the people of Morgantown, West Virginia. So somebody stepped up and cooked Armani some mango, which he loved. And we had spaghetti with blush sauce, pasta with vodka sauce, shrimp and grits. There was a lot of interesting meals, but worked out great. I think the people enjoyed doing it as much as our players enjoyed eating it. So that's part of the reason why we love Morgantown. Absolutely. Because we love the people here.
Yeah, and there were some people that actually tweeted and said, if you do this again, I'll do it, or I want to cook. So, yeah.
Well, if somebody wants to cook me meatloaf every Sunday evening, right about, I don't know, 6:30, somewhere around there. Give me a couple hours afterwards to have a couple drinks, wash it down.
Stop looking at me. I'm not doing it. You know I don't like to cook. If anybody out there wants to make Maisie meatloaf, have at it. Please do.
Since you brought it up, you're cooking. Can we talk about your cook? Let me tell the people the first meal you ever cooked for me.
Go ahead.
We had just met, and she wanted to treat me because, safe to say, you fell in love instantly with me.
Nope.
So, anyhow, she invited me over to her apartment for dinner. You made two chicken breasts. Two. There's a reason I say two. Because the recipe in the chicken breast called for 4 cloves of garlic. But at the time, you thought a clove was the entire ball. So you made two chicken breasts and put 4 balls of garlic in with them. And I tasted it and thought to myself, this is awful garlicky. But in the back of my mind, I was just trying to get lucky that night. So
correct.
I didn't even need the chicken. I would have just ate the garlic.
You did not get lucky that night. Let's just go ahead and preface it right there.
Yeah, it's funny.
Stop.
This podcast is about the truth.
That's not the truth. Stop. Our kids might listen to this. That is not the truth. So, but the garlic is the truth.
That was, what year was that?
We met in 2002.
So in the last 22 years, I still have this garlicky aftertaste in my mouth. So thank you for that.
Garlic is very good for you, and I believe it wards off vampires, so.
Yeah, good on you. I haven't seen a vampire in 22 years.
See, it works. You last week wanted to talk about building up this program, and it brought me back to when we came up here for your interview. When you came up here for the interview, they let me fly along and tag along, and I was a part of the process. And I'll never forget Oliver Luck and Kelly Zinn now, but Kelly Cunningham then. We were standing at Holly Field showing you the facilities, saying you have to see the vision of the new field. And this is where you're going to be playing in the meantime. But there's something bigger and better out there. And boy, it has been bigger and better since we've been here.
Yeah, I'll never forget. A couple things stick out in my mind on that first interview. Kelly like you said, Cunningham at the time, took me up to the hill, and it was just a mound of dirt and trees at the time. And she said, "There it is." I thought she saw some turkeys or something. What are you talking about? "Well, there's where the field's going to be. Can you envision it?" When she said that's where the field's going to be, I was immediately looking into the future about what a beautiful facility on that hill with that view out toward Cooper's Rock would look like. So, yes, I could envision it. And then Oliver Locke, when I sat down in the office with him, he said, "I'm not going to sugarcoat this. Things here are bad, bad." And he wasn't talking about the kids. He was talking about the resources, and they were changing clothes in the trunks of their car, and the field was in terrible shape. There was literally goose shit all over the field and rocks in the dirt and the dugouts. For some reason, back in the day, when people built dugouts for baseball field, that's why you got to be careful when you hire people to build baseball fields, because rarely are they baseball people. So I think the people that built the dugouts at Holly Field looked in the book and said, "How many baseball players play at one time?" And there's 9. So they built the dugout for 9 people. So that's about how many could fit in the dugouts at Holly Field. So Oliver said, "I promise you this, I'm going to build you a beautiful facility, and we're going to get into one of the best conferences in the country, but it is going to take so long because we're in rough shape right now," he said, "and I don't know shit about baseball. I got to have somebody that can do this for me." And I said, "All right, dude, you talked me into it." I love Oliver because he's an outside-the-box thinker, and I am too. And that's what you have to be in order to be successful here. You have to be creative and let the community cook meals for the players and be creative with your money and scholarships and do all that. So when I took this job, everybody said, when the Mountaineers got into the Big 12, everybody said, "Football will be fine. Basketball, they'll be fine." Poor baseball. We didn't even qualify for the Big East tournament the year before we joined the Big 12, which is, I think, the top 8 teams made it at the time. So we weren't doing well in a bad league, and now we're jumping into the best league. Everybody thought we were going to get steamrolled. That first year, a lot of things happened that changed this program. Number one, I thought, when you think something is surmountable, then you have to teach people that it's not surmountable. In that first year with that first team, one of the first things we did was we went on a 12-mile hike, which I thought was really cool. We started down on the rail trail down off the Goshen Road exit. You know, the rail trail goes along the river the whole way. And we started our hike at Goshen Road and finished right there at by 84 Lumber in Star City, about 12 miles. And when I first told the team we're going on a 12-mile hike to signify being in the Big 12, they all looked at each other and then looked at me and they're like, "Are you serious?" And I was like, "Yes, I'm serious." I said, "It's 12 miles. You've never walked 12 miles in your life. But if you think about it, 12 miles is just one step at a time. If you just take one step long enough, you'll go 12 miles. You could go 20 miles if you want. It's just one step after the next. And before you know it, you've gone 12 miles. And that first hike, we let everybody on the team, it took about 4 hours, something like that. We let everybody on the team be at the front of the pack for about 5 minutes. So for a 5-minute period or 10-minute period, or every guy during that hike was the team leader at one point. And I thought that was pretty cool that they had the team on their shoulders for a brief period in time. And that teaches them a little bit about leadership. And that's not unlike, you know, when you see a bunch of geese flying in a V formation. Do you know why one side is always longer than the other?
No.
They always start out in perfect V formation. But after they fly a little while, a different goose takes the lead, which makes the line a little off balanced. So you never see geese flying in a perfect V formation because there's always a different leader. And that's what that Big 12 hike was about, teaching kids that if you think something is insurmountable, it really isn't. And we had to get that mentality first. And when we established that mentality, then you have to follow it up with team culture, work ethic, develop the creed that our kids say. You know, when you go to a baseball game, you see a team huddle up and they all say something and nobody ever knows what they say. And well, this is what they say. They say our creed. Every organization has a creed. The Navy SEALs have a creed. Everybody in the military has a creed. The police have a creed. This is our creed. And this is what our kids say all the time. It goes like this. I am a Mountaineer. I am proud to wear the gold and blue. I represent my state, my school, my family, then myself. I do not take credit for my success, nor do I lay blame for my defeat. I make a solemn promise to my coaches and teammates to become the best possible player I can be. I will give every ounce of energy to WVU until the day is done. I am a Mountaineer. And that's what our guys say all the time, and it's actually pretty easy to say. What did it take me, 15 seconds? But it takes a lot to do that. To make a solemn promise to your coaches and teammates to be the best player you can be, there's so much that goes into that. You have to be a good player. You have to work hard on the field. You have to eat right. You have to sleep right. You have to get strong. You have to get fast. You have to be good in the community. So our kids, I actually believe that our kids live by that creed. Not all of them. Sometimes I got to put my foot in their ass. But I think that's how we've gotten to the point where we are now. You know, we've been ranked in the top 25, I think, at some point, 7 or 8 seasons in a row. So you'd like to think it's sustainable right now. But I do have to give a shout out to one guy that I think really, really helped. Harrison Musgrave was on this team when I got here. He had just had Tommy John surgery. And that first season in the Big 12, we were picked to finish last by everyone who had a vote. And I think like 100 people vote on the preseason predicted order of finish. So not one asshole said next to last. They all said, Mountaineers will be last. We got every vote. Well, Harrison Musgrave came along that first season and threw, if I'm not mistaken, 5 consecutive complete game shutouts on Friday night in the Big 12. And not single-handedly, he had a bunch of guys with him, but if not for Harrison Musgrave, we finished 3rd in the Big 12 our first season. And Harrison had a huge, huge role in that. And when that happened, when the Mountaineers finished 3rd in the conference, I think the community was like, well, that's pretty cool. And everybody else in the country was like, looks like the Mountaineers are pretty serious about baseball now. So big shout out to him. And I think the next program changer was Alec Manoah. Being drafted in the first round, it was his team that hosted that regional here. And that really, the people that came and watched that atmosphere in that regional are like, well, this is pretty cool. We sold it out. It was an electric atmosphere. And I think the community was like, I can really get on board with this. And since that time, you know, last year, I think our last 10 home games were all sellouts. So I think the people of Morgantown really, really like West Virginia baseball. And shout out to Harrison and AK and all the cast of characters, and I could name 100 of them, but all the cast of characters that have believed in that creed over the last 12 years to put this program where it's at now.
How do you sustain that?
I think we've sustained it because I've surrounded myself with really, really good people. You know, my first staff of Derek Matlock, Steven Trout, who are both head coaches right now in Division One, Daniel Cart was my first volunteer. He was a great West Virginia kid who's now a very high-level professional scout. Those guys were tremendous, and they all had a vision. We signed 19 players that first summer in a recruiting class. I didn't get the job till June and didn't hire those 3 guys until July. School starts in August. We signed 19 players in a month, and those players really, really helped. John Means was in that class, future big leaguer. Sean Carley, who was a transfer from the Air Force Academy, came and really pitched well for us. And we just started sprinkling great players into a culture and a vision that we had. And then Trouty leaves, and Matlock leaves, and Cart leaves. And here comes Sabins and Ginther and Jagar and all the people that have helped. So everybody has to have the vision and believe in the culture. And then once you do that, can you imagine adding really good players to an existing culture? Now our kids go into every game thinking they're going to win. And our kids come to the locker room and the facility and look at our stadium and our new turf and are very proud to be Mountaineers. And that's hard to teach, man. That's hard to teach. That game we played Can I say last night? I don't know when this podcast is airing.
Probably going to drop on Thursday, but whatever.
That Marshall game that we played in Charleston, I mean, that place was sold out. Just hearing the fans chanting, "Let's go, Mountaineers," and singing "Country Roads" afterwards.
And the trumpet player?
And the trumpet player. I think the people of West Virginia are proud of this program right now. So regardless of what happens the rest of this season, because it's my last, I will leave being the head coach of this program with a sense of pride that we've built something pretty special here.
Agreed. I did reach out to people in the Twitter world and ask them if they had any questions for us. And one of the questions comes from Bob O'Connor. He's a big fan, big Mountaineer fan, came out to Arizona last year and watched us play. He wanted to know, does Coach Mazie call all the pitches for the Mountaineers?
Coach Mazie does call all the pitches for the Mountaineers. I get this question a lot at my show at Mondays because the people who come to my show at Mondays, I love those people. They're always asking me baseball questions from what they see that they don't understand. It's hard to understand everything that goes on in a game because there's so many intricacies. But yes, I call all the pitches. You will see me. I look like I don't know what I look like. I got wires hanging all over me and I got earpieces in and I got microphones on my jacket and I'm holding remotes. I'm actually not playing video games. I'm actually communicating with the players. I actually have a microphone in which I can talk to the catcher. He wears an earpiece. And the beauty of that is it's only a one-way radio. He can't talk back. So I talk to the catcher that way, but everybody is wearing a thing on their wrist. I call it a Timex. Looks like a watch, but I plug some stuff onto my remote and they all look at their watch and they get the pitch that's called. When we're on offense, they get the play that's called. So we are communicating via the Timex.
And you call the offense as well. You run that as well. People might not know that.
I do, but Saves wears a Timex, coaching third. Jagar wears one, coaching first. I didn't know this till last night, but Jagar actually looks at every pitch that I call because he's the catching coach and he wants to know if the catcher screw up. So, but the pitchers have the ability to, if they don't like what I call, they have the ability to tell me to kick rocks. And they can, if you ever see the pitcher look at the catcher and either point up or down with a certain number of fingers, he didn't like what I called and wants to throw a different pitch, which I really encourage because I don't want them to be robots. I don't get a record for a win or a loss. They do. So I don't want them to look at me and say, "Why'd you call that pitch? Why'd you call that pitch?" So they all have the right to throw what they want to throw with good reason. You know, we talk about it and go over scouting reports. So if you ever see a pitcher do that, that's what he's doing, changing the pitch that I called to the pitch that he wants to throw. So thanks to Bob O'Connor. His tweets are amazing. Anytime you see Bob O'Connor tweet, it only ever says one thing. Ever. Doesn't matter. Let's go Mountaineers.
He's a big
good,
fan.
Bad, or indifferent. He always says, "Let's go Mountaineers." Shout out to Bob. Thank you for that.
We love Bob. All right. Joe wants to know, with the success of the baseball team, is it getting easier to get recruits now, or is it still a struggle to get them to come to WVU?
Both. It's easier to get them if we can get them here on campus. If they can meet the people, if they can see the facilities, if they can meet all the coaches and staff and see everything that we do, it's hard for them to say no to this if they get here, which is getting harder these days with the transfer portal and the process being so sped up, kids just making early decisions. So yes, if we can get them here, we like our chances. But you know, when we first got here, we couldn't recruit against Texas and Oklahoma and TCU and Virginia Tech and Maryland, people like that. So it was a real struggle. But now we've had so much success against those teams, we feel like we can recruit against those programs and have success. But it's still tough, you know, teams with great traditions of going to Omaha and doing great things, that attracts kids in itself. So to answer your question, yes, we're getting better players. Yes, it's still extremely difficult at West Virginia.
I think we're going to wrap things up now. I need to go get some caffeine because I'm a little tired. I know you need a little jolt of caffeine. And I'm telling you right now,
I need
you
a nap.
You can get mad. I'm going to record your snoring and it is going in next week's podcast because I edit this. So
you're going to go outside right now and Google loudest snoring person ever and record it.
No, no.
How are you going to identify that that's me?
Because I will talk lightly while you're snoring and let people know this is Coach Maisie snoring. No. I mean, I'll video it if you want. Let's just get it out there.
That's just you being an asshole. That's all that is.
That's right. That's right. You want to call me out? Game on, buddy. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's edition of Maisie Days. We'll be back next week.
Yeah, let's go make some garlic chicken for dinner tonight.
And you will not be getting lucky.
Shocker.
Shut up. That was good.